This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you and good morning, world. With our technology today, we're probably going around the world, and we're hoping that you're part of our audience this morning and every Saturday morning here on WGN Radio. And as I mentioned earlier, we have a busy Saturday here in the desert in Arizona with the cattle producers of Yavapai County, Arizona. That's about an hour and a half drive north of the Phoenix area. But today is an event. We'll talk a little bit more about it because this is the 86th year that the cattle producers in Yavapai County have staged this event. And I'll tell you why they started it 86 years ago, because that in itself is an interesting story. Also going to share with you the largest pumpkin ever grown in North America. Who did it? Where is it? And how heavy? You won't believe it. You won't believe it. More than a ton. One pumpkin. We'll get to that, too, a little bit later here on the Saturday morning show. But right now, we're going to take time out to talk about something very important in the agricultural community. Safety. Being careful. Doing away with danger hazards that could cripple or take a life. Because we're in between National Fire Prevention Week and National Farm Safety Week, and Max is going to join us to talk about those two activities and the importance to making your farm or ranch as safe as you can for adults and especially for kids. And there's something else that's going on this weekend nationally that I find fascinating. It has to do with the alpaca. And you learn more about alpacas than you probably wanted to learn. So that and more coming up at about 10 minutes after 5 o'clock. And we'll check in and talk to Max Armstrong when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. 12 minutes after 5 o'clock on a rather cool morning. Yes, indeed, fall arriving across the Midwest, but in the desert Southwest, where we've been spending the past several weeks, temperatures are still over 100 degrees during the day. But then when the sun drops below the horizon in the evening, it gets pretty pleasant, around 75, 78 degrees. Several deadlines are approaching very quickly. The September 30th deadline to write a new farm bill for the next five-year program, and the latest from the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Chairman Conaway, says that he's rallying the troops and is set to pass a farm bill. Quoting the chairman, "You never give up if there's time on the clock. No matter the score, you fight every play as if it were the last, and we're not there yet." That was his charge last week to agricultural producers, bankers, and commodity leaders about the passage of the Farm Bill before it expired last night at midnight. Chairman Conaway, speaking at the Southwest Council of Agribusiness annual meeting in Lubbock, Texas this week, said, "We are running out of time. There is a real sense of urgency within me to get this thing done. And I hope my counterparts also have the same sense, and we're not allowing political considerations to affect what we're willing to do and not to do." The passage of the bill is about protecting production agriculture, Conaway said, and continuing to provide Americans with the safest, most abundant, and affordable food and fiber supply of any developed nation in the world. And every American, whether they know it or not, should have a keen interest in us getting this farm bill done. Now, one of the titles still in negotiations is the nutrition title. That's the one that used to be called the food stamp program. It's now called the SNAP program. But it's a program to bring food that we produce in surplus out of storage and provide it for the conditions that people who don't have quite as much food as other people certainly do need it. And he said it's not the only issue, the nutrition title. We have additional things to come to grips with on SNAP, but Title I, the Crop Commodity Program provision, nowhere near ready, and Title II, conservation title, is not either. So now they're talking extending the current farm program to avoid going back to 1948 to run the USDA under the Farm Bill that was written back in 1948. Nobody wants to do that. And so they're going to, I would guess, which they have done before, get an extension on the current Farm Bill and keep those rules in place until they can come to agreement on a new Farm Bill. That's just one of the deadlines we're watching today. We'll talk about another one a little bit later, and that is reaching an agreement on NAFTA, the Canada-U.S.-Mexican agreement, the North American Free Trade Agreement. We don't have that one put together, and they had hoped to do that by the end of September. So a couple of deadlines facing agricultural legislators and agricultural producers here on this Saturday. The activity also on farm safety continues, and this has been an annual event for a long, long time, for decades. National Farm Safety Week, National Fire Prevention Week. So I'm going to call on Max Armstrong right now to refresh our memories on what that is all about. Max?
Well, Orion, I wanted to spend a minute or two this morning right here smack dab between National Farm Safety Week and National Fire Prevention Week to talk about something that ties in with both. Now, Farm Safety Week ended a week ago today. Fire Prevention Week starts a week from tomorrow. It's always the week of October 8th, because October 8th, 1871, was when the Great Chicago Fire took place, killing 250 people. But the reason I bring it up from the context of agriculture is because we always think during Farm Safety Week of the highway hazards, the dangers in the field, the danger of being around livestock, children in danger on the farm. Certainly all of these subjects need to be given constant attention. Farming has always been a dangerous business, and it still is, despite the safety equipment that is now a part of our machinery and agriculture. But now, here's something to think about. How is your knowledge of CPR, the life-saving practice of cardiopulmonary resuscitation, the simple emergency procedure that can save a life? And this is fresh on my mind, because about 6 weeks ago, I watched CPR performed in a life-or-death situation. I watched as two men gave another gentleman a chance to live to see another day. I was down in central Illinois. I was there for a tractor ride. I came into my vehicle, and as I arrived, I looked over and I saw the bottom of a pair of shoes sticking out from a group of men. And I could see a police officer shoving his hands into the chest of a man lying there on the ground. The fellow who was on the ground was there to take photographs, and he was getting ready to take a photograph of the police officers who were going to help with that tractor ride. He had them lined up for the shot, and then he became the focus of attention. He dropped right there at their feet, and it turns out he dropped at the right place at the right time, because he was around people who knew immediately what to do. They swung into action and started those chest compressions and saved his life. In fact, I found out later this was the second time that the photographer had been revived through cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Right there he was with, there was a state trooper, there were county deputies, there were local municipal police officers, and they swung into action. Well, I shared this story on Facebook, or maybe it was Twitter, a few days ago, and among those responding was a rural EMT from out of the Plain States. I think he was from Kansas. And he told me his track record with CPR had not been good. He said, so far, Max, I'm 0 for 14. There had been 14 times he had unsuccessfully tried CPR when he was called for an emergency. 14 times that someone had called 911, but help arrived too late. And on some of those occasions, the person called, who did the calling, likely could have kept that victim alive until first responders arrived. But the gentleman, the EMT, said they didn't know what to do to perform CPR. I would hate to be in that situation, wouldn't you? I mean, if your spouse or parent or valued employee out on the farm collapsed in front of you, perhaps in a remote area of the farm, would you know how to swing into action? Just imagine, think about this, the satisfaction of being the one who stepped in and gave your loved one or one of your employees a chance to live again. And most of our communities have somewhere where you can get CPR instruction. Maybe the hospital, the Red Cross, many of the local fire stations. Those folks, especially during Fire Prevention Week, starting a week from tomorrow, can guide you somewhere in the community where you can get a CPR course. Maybe you're a part of a club or an organization where you can ask the local fire department to have one of their paramedics come in and give a course. Someone might be able to come out to your farm to make sure you and your family and employees know how to perform this simple procedure to the beat of Staying Alive. Yes, the old Bee Gees song. Staying alive as you push in on the chest. Maybe it's been a few years since you were one of those in one of those CPR classes. Maybe you need a refresher. But again, just think what that would feel like if you knew what to do and you were successful. Or conversely, think about what if you didn't know what to do. It'll be a big day this morning up near Hebron, Illinois, Orion. The Von Bergens have their plow day and their customer appreciation day. You know what? I think this is the 20th year that they are holding this. You'll get to see some antique farm equipment, and I think you'll get to see some plowing in the field. That's what we've done in the past out there. I think I was there for the very first one, and I believe this is the 20th year. And certainly I'd planned to be there, but just a number of factors came into play to make it impossible for me to be at Hebron. But I hope you'll go out there and visit with the Von Bergens. Good folks who do a great job growing crops. Right there along Route 73, just a little bit east of the town of Hebron, Illinois. Tell them Max said hello. Orion?
Well, thank you very much, Max. And again, can't stress enough the farm safety message and the fire prevention message. And particularly at harvest time, fire has become a greater problem. Combines that catch fire in the field for one reason or another, and with dryness and with the dust and the smoke from harvesting the crops, fires do break out, and it's a sad picture whenever I see a combine that has been destroyed by fire in a field at harvest time when they're trying to get the crop in the bin and all of a sudden can't do it because they don't have a combine anymore. Well, we're at 23 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. There's another unusual event going on this weekend, starting today and continuing through tomorrow, and I want to talk about that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Between now and news time, I want to talk about an interesting activity taking place across the United States today and tomorrow. The Alpaca Owners Association, inviting you to visit their member farms and ranches on National Alpaca Farm Days this weekend, September 29 and 30, a unique opportunity for the public to explore the many aspects of the alpaca livestock industry in North America. You'll have the opportunity to meet these beautiful, inquisitive animals in person, to experiencing their luxurious alpaca products at individual farm stores, and there'll be something for everyone. Now, every alpaca farm, well, I shouldn't say every, but alpaca farms across the United States are involved, and if you want to get the location of an alpaca farm that could be next to you, here's the website, alpacafarmdays.com. Alpaca, A-L-P-A-C-A, alpacafarmdays.com, a capital A, a capital F, and a capital D. But there you'll find a lot of things that I learned, because I never raised alpacas on the farm, but here are some of the fun things about the alpaca family. It's a member of the camelid family, and it came from South America. First imported to the United States in 1984. Hasn't been around in this country as an industry that long. Alpacas lived to be 15 to 20 years old, and the oldest was 27. They weigh between 100 and 200 pounds, about 36 inches high. Alpacas produce 5 to 10 pounds of fleece per year when sheared, and alpaca fleece is as soft as cashmere and warmer, lighter, and stronger than wool. And it comes in 16 natural shades, which can be dyed in bright colors. Alpacas eat about 2 pounds of grass and hay per day. Oh, and they do chew a cud. And alpacas are safe and pleasant to be around. They do not bite or butt. They do not have sharp teeth, horns, hooves, and claws. And they're very quiet. As a matter of fact, they may make a humming noise to communicate, or an occasional shrill sound to send an alarm. Alpacas are smart animals and are fairly easy to train, and they can learn to compete in obstacle courses and jump small hurdles. So that's the highlights of what you'll see today if you go and visit an alpaca farm anywhere in your community. It's National Alpaca Farm Days today and tomorrow. And again, that website to get more information, alpacafarmdays.com. First time I think they've ever done that, and it's an interesting idea. Hope that many of you will take the opportunity to meet and get acquainted with an alpaca. Thank you very much, Roger. And yes, some cool temperatures. My golly, frost. And not a killing frost by any means, but pretty chilly this morning in some areas, including my town of Huntley, Illinois. So we're going to take a look at markets. A lot of interesting activity in the marketplace involving agriculture. And Max will be joining us in just a few minutes to talk with Jerry Goodell of the Price Futures Group about the current harvest and the volume of harvest and all of that coming up here on the Saturday morning show. But we're delighted to have you along. And now it's time for Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion. This week, talking about a personal milestone. If you're looking for an easy way to keep your toilet bowls rust-free, I have the answer. Rust Guard is the in-tank toilet bowl cleaner that protects against rust and hard water stains with every flush. And Rust Guard is safe to use on plumbing and septic systems, and it will not harm pets. That's Rust Guard. Check us out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. I would like to begin this week, Samuelson Says, by stealing a line from a longtime friend in the broadcast industry, the late and great Paul Harvey, who very often in his presentations would say, "Partly personal, please." And so this week I'm saying partly personal, please, because I don't want to talk about any major issues in politics or in agriculture. This past week, I celebrated my 58th anniversary on the air at WGN Radio in Chicago, talking about agriculture and food production. I could never have imagined in 1960, when I arrived in Chicago, I would, 58 years later, be doing the same, with some similar topics, other topics that weren't even discussed in 1960. But I have to thank you, the audience, because without you, I wouldn't have spent 58 years on the air of a major radio station in the heart of a big city talking about agriculture, hogs and cattle and soybeans and corn and cotton and all of the other topics that we've covered over the years. The 58 years have been unbelievable. And that's why I entitled my book a few years ago, You Can't Dream Big Enough, aimed at young people, because milking cows on a Wisconsin dairy farm, I would never have imagined or even dreamed that I would go to all 50 states, that I would travel to 44 countries to take a look at agriculture, and that I would meet 9 U.S. presidents and every secretary of agriculture since Ezra Taft Benson in the Eisenhower administration. It has been wonderful. And again, I thank you and the people who have supported me commercially for making this 58 years the best years of my life. So, thanks to you. And that is it for my thoughts on Samuelson Says. Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. 20 minutes before 6 o'clock, and we're going to check in again with Max and Jerry Goodell to talk markets when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
From the offices of Price Futures Group in Chicago, Jerry Goodell joining us in the studio, and it's been a while since we've talked.
Yes, it has, Max, but it's always good to be with you.
Yeah, last time we talked, we didn't know we were going to have crops this large.
No. This year's production has turned out to be pretty solid along the way. Is it going to be over 180? I guess there's a little bit of choices on that recently from some of the reports, but in general, still a very good-sized corn crop, and the soybeans yields are very, very strong.
We're in the midst of doing the next survey, I suppose, right about now, and the report will come out in just a few days. Will those numbers be revised up, you think?
Well, I think the soybeans are going to be there, maybe up another half bushel on those. Corn's a real interesting one. We really haven't got to the Western Corn Belt yields and get a chance to see a good response to that. We know that Missouri didn't have the best crops. Southern Iowa had some drought issues. Kansas. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what kind of yields we're going to get out of that Northern Iowa, Southern Minnesota areas. Those are highly productive areas. And the excessive moisture we had in the spring and then continued on during the summer in different spots at different times, I think could have an impact on both corn and soybean yields, primarily from leaching on the corn side or from just the classic wet feed issue on the soybeans. Actually, I've even heard some reports in my home county west of Fort Dodge there in Calhoun that they've had some issues about their yields on beans.
Generally, we don't kill a crop with excess moisture, but as you point out, there's been a lot in that very productive region where the yields are usually quite robust.
Yes, Southern Minnesota usually leads the state of Minnesota, and that's surprises me a little bit about how the USDA's 191 yield that they did not revise this last time around stayed there. Northern Iowa, same issue. There's other areas of Iowa, eastern and through the central area there that can help support it. But I'm not sure the southern parts of Iowa that had some less than optimal moisture will be able to sustain it. Right now, though, excellent yields. We've heard you and I both heard the Indiana, Illinois. Ohio's a little sketchy yet at this point. Michigan could be an interesting state. They had some drought issues this spring.
That's right.
And how that yield comes through is going to be another one. And as we looked at Wisconsin, they've had the excessive moisture that just came right across there from Sioux Falls right to Milwaukee.
The harvest is running a little bit ahead of average. Some places, it's well ahead of average. If you take a look, for example, at Missouri, Kentucky, Illinois, well ahead of the average pace.
Yes, yes.
Is it your sense this will be a quick harvest?
I do, and I think it's because the absolute average temperatures we had this summer moved this maturity along. And that's the other reason why it was kind of startling that we saw that 178 go to 181 yield, because we already had a lot of that major in. A year ago, we didn't. We had a cool summer and after basically the middle of July, and we didn't have the average temperature early in the season to push this crop along like it did this year. And so that was the one that definitely has caused some head scratching. Are we going to be a 170 crop? No. The crop size itself is really not the story in corn. It's really the demand side.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get to that in a moment. But out there in the field already, we're hearing reports in town of piles in some places already this early in the harvest, grain being piled outside on the ground, which, of course, is routine about every season. Some will store out there, but it seems like it's a little early for that.
Well, I think the one interesting thing I think that came about this year is the fact that this our summertime rally in corn didn't happen. It just, you know, Memorial Day came and then it went south on other issues and that. I think what we've got there is some of that is that I've heard some of the corn that was in the elevator that was nice and dry they could put under the tarp went out there and hoped to get that move through the system quickly, and then they were able to utilize their systems for drying and storage of the new crop. So I agree with you that there's been some piles out there sooner than you think we should, but I think there might have been some adjustments in how they were handling.
Sure. Do you expect any logistics problems here with a big crop of both corn and beans coming in and not such robust exports?
That's an interesting scenario right now, because I think the transportation system is ready to take it, and that the big question is that the price points in the exporting situation have not been that encouraging. As we all know, the basis levels on soybeans are extremely weak.
Just brutal.
Very. You know, the Western Corn Belt out there, a dollar or more. You know,
and
excellent heavy-duty levels. The interesting thing about it is that we still do have a certain amount of beans that were sold ahead, and I think they will move through the system and help alleviate some of this problem. But I agree that there's the combination of the corn is always an interesting one in the Western Corn Belt. Those guys don't think about marketing sometimes until after the Memorial Day in the summer, and now all of a sudden there wasn't that ability. We should, though, on the export side, we have been consistently this summer and on through the fall here going to have a super export demand because of issues around the world.
Now, that surprises folks a little bit to hear you say that. There's been so much negativity about trade. Go over that one more time. Well, our exports aren't that bad. Both corn and beans, are you talking?
Well, definitely on the corn side. And beans, to this point, are not terribly out of position from where they've been last year. The biggest problem is that we don't have a Chinese buyer on the soybeans. On the corn side, though, the issues that occurred last year in South America between Argentina and Brazil, and also the interesting thing has impacted Brazil's exports, has been their transportation costs and the whole issue of trucker strikes and things of that nature. And so they just have not moved the corn that they traditionally do into the positions for export in Brazil. And so the export opportunities, they move their corn really September through till January, and then they want to stop and make sure they're ready to ship their soybeans and that out of the Brazilian ports. And a lot of it does go north off of the Amazon now, but that's because of Mato Grosso and the corn production. And that didn't, it wasn't the problem of 2 years ago that we had a crop under 70, 68, 69. This is an 80 crop. But the whole scenario is that the demand structure around the world has improved dramatically on corn in that scenario. So we're in excellent shape on the corn side, and I think that we keep forgetting the fact that we had a 2 billion carryover this year, and we're looking at a 1.7 crop and maybe even a 1.6 ending carryover stock on corn. We're going to be moving southward. Now, the biggest thing we got problems with is that we're going to be starting in January and February thinking about how many more acres we're going to plant, and we're going to plant more corn. It's what we heard, 3, 4, 5, you know, we all hurled
million acres
of increases switching out of soybeans because of the issues in our soybean trade.
Some people have been saying we're just one weather hiccup away from a rip-roaring corn market, but let's look at what's going to happen to the Southern Hemisphere. If those soybeans get planted early, if they mature on a regular schedule, if they're harvested early, that will increase, will it not, that second crop of corn down there?
Yes.
And then we'll add to the acreage come spring.
Exactly. Those are the issues that are in face of us as to the exact timing of those. A year ago, the delays on planting the beans down there because of the dryness ultimately did have a hiccup on the corn. It took a while for the market to realize that after the first of the year starting in 2018, but the seeds of that issue of corn were started last fall. And this year it's the opposite. They are off to a solid early start and that. As to exactly how many, we're just getting started in their planting season. They're just, who knows, the weather always seems to improve this time of year from their dry season to the wet season. But it's hopefully they get a chance to move up and get their timely plants. It's kind of interesting, though, is that the way things seem to be moving in the El Nino-La Nina cycle seems to be going towards El Nino. And we've already seen the impacts of that in Australia in their wheat crop. And that if that's the case, then that could have some impact on some yield capabilities on beans in the northern hemisphere, in Mato Grosso, in the northern areas of Brazil. But that's something to keep an eye on. It's not something that's impacting us right now.
It has been a few years since there's been a serious drought in Brazil, correct?
Exactly. In the soybean areas and the soybean yields. We've had two impacts on the late season corn, but not on the beans. You're exactly right.
And the spread, the geography down there over which they produce their beans, north to south, limits their exposure for a drought damage, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. You know, we're talking about, isn't the classic Minneapolis to New Orleans spread between San Paranon and the southern areas of Mato Grosso. That's a significant 1,000 to 1,500 miles.
Talk a little bit about Russia. There was some popular press attention to that this week when the Wall Street Journal did a story, and some folks not close to agriculture were a little surprised at all of that, that how we have seen the competitor rise there.
Oh, yes. Well, it's been something that is impressive. You just can't say anything about it. They've improved their technology over there. They're a lot more timely on their harvesting. One issue in the short term is that we've got a lot of wheat in the spring wheat area that needs to still come in, and hopefully that they can get it in. But in the wheat market, the Black Sea is king, and that's what we're dealing with right now, is that they have kind of limited what has really been a really tightening world supply of wheat. They've been more willing to be a seller in this market under a combination of currency issues and economic issues and maybe something to deal with the energy issues and things like that. They've been more than willing to be a seller of wheat here, and it's limited the short-term situation of wheat. But Europe's had another significant drought. Mm-hmm. Australia is really looking ugly for this coming year. Canada is not as bad a looking crop, but they've got some issues up there. I think we've still got some good potential in wheat between now and December.
Back to this harvest, if it is a quick one, as we were talking a little bit earlier, and I've been asking this question. I saw a little chatter about it this week in some of the market analyst commentary. Could we have the lows and prices put in early this fall?
Well, that's not an unusual situation when you talk about big crops and that. And to some extent, the bounce we've kind of had here in the soybeans, which has kind of surprised people in the short term. I think there's been a combination of how many more things can be tariffed? That's pretty well at the top of the list. So that issue is behind us. There doesn't seem to be any real issue about any talks coming. But the one thing that's popped up in here in the last week to 10 days is that we seem to find this situation where our competitors are buying our beans. Argentina's talked about buying anywhere from 1.5 to 2 million. The most surprising one to me was last week when we heard that some Canadians come in and bought some U.S. beans. That's interesting. And then now, this was yesterday, the day before, we had the Brazilian consultants down there say, well, we're going to have to import another 1 million beans from the U.S. Well, all of a sudden, our beans are looking pretty cheap at $2.50 less.
Very cheap.
And so I think the world is looking at, so now all of a sudden, and I have actually heard some improvement in these basis levels, not so much in the far western countries, but at the river and also at the Gulf has picked up because of this newfound foreign buying.
Interesting. Well, we'll continue to watch it. It needs to improve, doesn't it?
It does. We need a lot more improvement in that soybeans.
Jerry Goodell with Price Futures Group here in the studio.
We're coming up to news time here on WGN Radio, but I'm going to end the broadcast with the promise I made at the outset, the announcement of the largest pumpkin produced in North America. It comes from New Hampshire. Steve Geddes is the man who grew it, and get this, one pumpkin weighed in at 2,528 pounds. That's well over a ton. The Great Pumpkin Commonwealth told the Boston Globe that a pumpkin grown by Mr. Geddes is the biggest pumpkin ever grown in North America. And this week at the Deerfield Fair in New Hampshire, it earned Geddes a first place ribbon and $6,000 in prize money. I can't even begin to imagine how many pumpkin pies will come from that one pumpkin. Well, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for doing the engineering. And we'll be coming back in time for the World Dairy Expo at Madison, Wisconsin next week. So we hope we'll see many of you there.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.